My Peace, a Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
It will look like suffering, like death, like the worst thing that could ever happen. But Jesus assures them, it is my peace, and I give it to you.
And for any size donation during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon preached by Todd on the first Pentecost. You can make a special Easter gift today at issuesetc.org. Thanks for keeping us in mind during the 50 days of Easter.
Why did you participate in the Gosnell blackout? The President of the United States could be asked about this since he fought against protections for these children that were born alive when he was in the Illinois Senate.
The President is aware of this. The President does not and cannot take a position on an ongoing trial.
There's somebody singing the music, and nobody else is singing along. And Luther would look at that and probably just tap somebody on the shoulder and say, you know, I had the same problem with the Church of Rome.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues, etc.
There are subjects that are sometimes considered taboo, not because it would be wrong to talk about them. It would be impolite. Perhaps you don't know how to bring up the subject. You don't know how to broach the subject. And then, what do you say? One of those subjects, especially in the church, not only in the greater society, but especially in the church, is mental illness. You know that it's there. There are few families, few people who are completely untouched by it. That is, that do not know someone or are related to someone or love someone who has or is suffering from some kind of mental illness. It is common, and it is something that the church needs to address. That's why we spend time here on Issues, etc., talking about it over the years, and we have talked about it many times over the years. The last time we talked about it with Pastor Todd Peppercorn, our listener response was such that we knew that we needed to have him back to answer some of your questions, your comments, and to address some of the issues that you want to raise when it comes to Christians and mental illness. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 18th of April. We're going to spend this hour with you, your questions and your comments on Christians and mental illness with Pastor Todd Peppercorn. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6944. 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email. We get those emails right here in real time. If you want to call us or email us anonymously, we would be happy to just leave all your information off as we take your question or your comment. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet at issuesetc or visit our Facebook fan page. You can leave a question or a comment there, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Pastor Todd Peppercorn is pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Rockland, California. He's author of the book, I Trust When Dark My Road, A Lutheran View of Depression. Todd, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Do you think that we have begun to turn the corner on I don't have a better word than taboo, but the kind of forbidden nature of the subject of mental illness in the church?
In some respects, yes. It's certainly talked about a lot more today than it was even 10 years ago. It is amazing, though, how much our prejudices and fears, I think, continue to be in the forefront. I mean, how long did it take in the midst of this horrible bombing on Monday for people to start talking about the people that did this must have been mentally ill and kind of going on there, and boom, right away you've got the stigma held up again and presumed that that's what must be going on.
What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that humans are sinners, which isn't any great surprise, I suppose. We live in such a society of divisions. We divide into age, socioeconomic status, ethnic background, and that's not even talking about the internet. And so, in some respects, the questions involving mental illness and sort of how we perceive mental illness are almost the same kind of things that you'll see in schools today, talking about bullying. We want to, on the one hand, highlight people's differences, and yet somehow, when we actually talk about those differences, a part of our knee-jerk reaction is, if it's something I don't know, then there's probably something wrong with it. And that certainly is the case with mental illness. I still pretty regularly will field questions, kind of variations on the question of what kind of sin did this person do to cause this kind of mental breakdown?
Well, that's what I've noticed as well. And I've noticed it primarily in myself. As part of being in the media, part of doing a radio program, you deal with all kinds of people. You don't necessarily have any kind of filter between you and those who may ask you a question. And sometimes you deal with someone and you start to think, oh, I don't know if this person is completely balanced mentally.
Right.
And my initial reaction, and I'm being completely honest with you, Todd, because
sure.
I participate unwillingly in the stigma as well. My initial reaction is often to assume that it's a moral failing that this person is behaving this way. It's a moral failing that this person can't help themselves or can't control their emotions or their feelings or their reactions.
Well, right. It sort of backs into a question of self-control.
Absolutely.
If this person could really exercise self-control, sort of in parentheses, like I can, then they wouldn't be having this problem. And so, you know, I've spoken many times about how mental illness plays upon our sinful nature. So my depression, for instance, will also build on my own natural desire to be lazy. And so the two just sort of feed off of one another. Well, in the very same way, when you're talking about someone else, if you're viewing someone else who is mentally ill in some way or another, whether we're talking about, you know, anything from developmental Down syndrome to depression to major schizophrenia, kind of across the board, there's going to be one part of you that's going to basically believe, Lord, I thank you that I am not like other sinners, that this has not happened to me, and again, the old man in me is going to want to make it so that I believe that I somehow am superior. And if I can be superior, then, boy, I am in a great place.
How do we thread the needle, though, between recognizing that there's mental illness at work here, but also saying, but that's no excuse for bad behavior?
That's right. And therein lies the rub, doesn't it? Because if you do have cases of legitimate danger, a person is a danger to themselves or others, our desire to not be prejudiced could actually put people in harm's way, which is equally wrong. I don't know. I've wrestled with that a lot. Perhaps a part of the answer comes in what is good care? Let's just think about in a hospital. What is good care? You know, some hospitals are going to be better than others. The same could be true for a nursing home. If you go to a place that has good care, it's going to mean that they treat you like you're human. Even if you have a contagious disease, they're still going to treat you like you're human. Now, they may be forced to take precautions from masks to gloves to whatever, but you're still a human being, and they still recognize that you need love and support and help and care, and they're going to do that the best they can. Again, because that's a physical illness, maybe that's easier than a mental illness. Because a mental illness is such an unknown, we're really afraid to care because we're afraid of being taken, of being of participating in sin? I don't know. What is the fear? What really is behind it? That maybe that's the question.
One other question I had for you before we get to our listeners' questions on the other
sure.
side of the break, and that is, when we're dealing with someone who is who's seriously mentally ill, I mean, everyone is, sometimes I think we trivialize that by saying, well, you know, everybody's a little off.
Yep.
You know, as though no one is mentally healthy. And so I think it tends to kind of dampen down the concerns that there may be for folks who really aren't. What are your thoughts there with a couple minutes before our break?
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for that. And again, there is a parallel with how we treat sin. Well, everybody's a sinner. Therefore, that means that sin doesn't actually matter. Well, that's that, you know, may it never be so among us. I think St. Paul said something like that. And in the same way, when we're talking about mental illness, in this way it's true. All of us have the seeds within us. You know, we're all suffering from the same sickness of sin. And all sickness is a result of sin. So in that way, we can say, yes, all of us could have this. However, because one person may be suffering worse in a particular way, somehow we need to learn to act in sympathy toward that person and not belittle them along the way.
Pastor Todd Peppercorn is our guest. When we come back from this break, we're going to get to your questions and your comments on Christians and mental illness. It's Thursday afternoon, April the 18th, picking up where we left off with him last time we were talking about Christians and mental illness. I invite your questions and your comment. We've got plenty of time to take them on this Thursday afternoon. 1-877-623-MYIE. This break is a great time to call 1-877-623-6943. Happy to take your questions and your comments anonymously. You can email us talkback@issuesetc.org, send us a tweet @issuesetc, or leave your question or comment for Pastor Todd Peppercorn at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc.
Well, you know, you sometimes hear from people that the liturgy itself is a barrier to reaching out with the Word of God and the goodness of Jesus Christ. And I believe that's just a bunch of baloney.
Pastor Will Wheaton on his presentation, Classical Christian Worship, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference this summer in Collinsville, Illinois.
The liturgy itself is overwhelmingly the very Word of God by which the outreach takes place. And it is an incredibly crafted balance of stuff that stays the same and of stuff that changes. So it has stability and variety automatically built into it, and it frees up the pastor to work on proclaiming the mystery of Christ that that particular liturgy is holding up for the people on that day. I think it's a great outreach tool rather than thinking of it as something that's a barrier.
Register for the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org.
The cross is our theology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano's Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
The latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal is out. I've written an article in this latest edition that has to do with your confession of faith. we somehow today think that it is more open-minded, more virtuous if we make our confessions of faith with our fingers crossed. Nobody wants to say they're certain of anything in this postmodern age, but that's not the pattern of confession that we find in Holy Scripture, nor in the life of the church historic. Our confessions ought to be certain. They ought to be made with no fingers crossed behind our back. If we say we believe it, we ought to really believe it unequivocally. And we ought to have a reason for what we believe as well. That's part of what I talk about in my article called I Believe, in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal. In addition, Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard has written about his journey from Jack Mormonism to Reformation theology in the Wittenberg Trail feature of the latest Issues Etc. Journal. Subscribe for free at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the big red button. All you need to do is enter your email address, and you're subscribed to the Issues Etc. Journal. Pastor Todd Peppercorn is our guest. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Alan has a question apropos of our previous subject here. He listens in Campbell Hill, Illinois. He asks you personally, did you get labeled with any kind of stigma when you went public with your mental illness, and how, if necessary, did you deal with it?
That's a good question. The trickiness about stigmas, of course, is that very often you don't know that they're actually there. My general experience was actually one of sympathy and of understanding. Certainly, in my congregation, which I was serving at the time, Messiah Lutheran Church in Kenosha, Wisconsin, they were wonderfully caring and supportive along the way, and that really was such a gift to me. But that is why so many people are afraid to speak publicly about it. I could name dozens of pastors whom I have spoken to over the years that will never go public with their troubles because they're afraid of that stigma of maybe I won't be able to get a call because I'm going to be seen as damaged goods, etc. So, while I don't think that I felt it a lot, it's certainly there, and many do feel it.
Well, that leads to a question from Jonathan in Minnesota. He says, where do pastors, especially pastors, go if they need help with depression or mental illness? He says, I have a hard time seeing one going to a Christian counselor, especially when some are set on the self-control theology that was mentioned. We talked about that last time, a fault with self-control or the will, and they don't have a basis on forgiveness of sins like Lutherans do. He says, I may be wrong, but it is a bit of a concern, I think. What are your thoughts there?
I think that's at least one of the crises that's facing the ministry in America today, is that we don't have a way, or an easy way, certainly, of caring for one another as pastors. And so if there's a pastor that is struggling with depression, with compassion fatigue, or overstress in their work, I think that ideally they should be able to go to any other pastor who would then be able to help them in some way. Realistically, that's probably not going to happen. And furthermore, it's made worse if you're talking about the ecclesiastical structure, circuit counselors, district presidents, etc., because they're put in a doubly messy situation of needing to offer pastoral care to this person, but at the same time also having to make judgments about the best interests of the congregation, and especially if there's any sin involved in some way, does there have to be some sort of ecclesiastical discipline? And so that person is, sad to say, I think it is not going to work to go that way, and I wouldn't recommend it, frankly.
I want you to address that, though, because both the answer you just gave and the question that came before that and your answer to it kind of raise an issue here, and that is someone might say, well, you know, if this guy is prone to depression, and I'm speaking here narrowly of pastors, if this guy's prone to depression,
or if he's suffered with bouts of it, maybe he's not fit to be a pastor. What's your response to that?
What I wish that I could say was, well, of course he's fit to be a pastor. The reality is that we poor, frail human beings do have limitations. It could be that someone's mental illness, and this wouldn't have to be mental illness. We could talk about any kind of physical impairment. At some point, could get to the time where they would be unable to fulfill their office as they've been appointed to do. I don't think we need to shy away from that or be afraid of it. The question is, how do we demonstrate compassion and love toward these pastors, toward all different pastors, as they try to struggle through those questions together? And how do we make it so that those pastors aren't hung out to dry at the end of it? And that maybe that's the real problem.
Does that concern then transfer to lay people? Because we have heard, as many times as we've talked about mental illness on the air, we have heard from listeners who say, I suffer from it, and guess what? I've been in congregations where I've been hung out to dry.
Sure. I think that's true in a congregational level. That's true in families. It is all too common for someone who suffers from a mental illness to end up getting divorced if they're married. It's very difficult to hold down a job in that way. So let's say you suffer from major clinical depression and you're afraid to tell your boss because you don't think that your boss is going to be understanding and you think you'll lose your job. So you don't tell them. And your work level suffers, you're late, you're forgetful. All of these things that we've talked about are common with depression. Well, what your boss is going to see is that you're lazy and you're not getting your job done, and you're still going to get fired. So that can be a very real problem at all across the board. And I don't mean this to sort of paint this doom and gloom picture, but as Christians, we are free to call a thing what it is and to recognize what's actually going on. Sometimes congregations and sometimes Christians aren't very caring toward one another, and that's a call to repentance and to recognize our own need for forgiveness here in the church.
Michael listens in Washington State. He says, my son's baptizing pastor from 10 years ago took his own life last year. Now, the occasion for our first conversation with you, Todd, was the suicide of Rick Warren's son, Matthew Warren, recently.
Yes.
And Michael says, do you hear regularly of other people about such occurrences? That is a pastoral suicide. Is this happening more than we know? It was very heartbreaking for us and support of our pastors and their kids. We just heard about Rick Warren's family, says Michael, is paramount. How common do you think this is?
Last year in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to my knowledge, there were 3 pastors that committed suicide out of 6,600 pastors. So I suppose if you were to look at the numbers, that may seem like pretty insignificant, but that is still a lot, in my opinion. I think that those numbers hold pretty consistent. Every year there are pastors that that are forced to resign or even take this ultimate step of taking their own life as a result. And I can only imagine the level of the crisis that this causes in their congregation and the pain and just with their own family, because the question is always going to be, well, but he was a pastor. He should, you know, he knows better. He should be the last person that would struggle with something like that. And so that's going to be a real crisis in that place and for other congregations around as well.
Michelle listens in Fenton, Iowa. She's got several questions. We'll take them one at a time. The first one is, what advice would you give a fellow pastor who's integrating back into their congregation after a depression hospitalization?
Number one, is going to be to be very clear with yourself, with your spouse, with your elders, that this does not mean I'm going to from 0 to 100% over a weekend, but that this is going to take time. It may mean sort of evaluating what it is that truly only you can do in the congregation, and what are the things that others can help you with. There are some things that the pastor does, administer the sacraments, but there are plenty of other things that pastors end up doing that do not have to be done by the pastor. They can be, but they don't have to. And so it can actually be a really good exercise for a congregation to sort of look at this and say, okay, what did we call this man to actually be and do among us? And how can we step up and support him and recognize, okay, maybe making sure that he's here an hour and a half before the church opens to turn the heat on isn't the best use of his time, or whatever.
Let's take a break. When we come back, some more questions for Pastor Todd Peppercorn. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. It's Thursday, April the 18th.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Ascension and Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Pentecost Sunday, May 19th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Ascension and Pentecost sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org, shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc. And you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at IssuesETC. Social networking for the thinking Christian. Facebook.com/IssuesETC and on Twitter at IssuesETC. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today. Facebook.com/IssuesETC and on Twitter at IssuesETC.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Pastor Todd Peppercorn is our guest, pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Rocklin, California, author of the book, I Trust When Dark My Road, A Lutheran View of Depression. You can download this booklet absolutely free at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Todd, here's another question. It comes from Michelle in Fenton, Iowa, following up on the last one. What kind of statement do you lovingly tell someone who intimates or even flat out just tells you that you weren't strong enough and that's why you had a depressive break? This would cover faith will free you type of statements also. What do you say to them?
I think where I would start in a case like that is, what gives you the idea that my faith, the strength or weakness of my faith, has anything to do with whether I'm mentally ill or not? I think I'd start with that question because, again, that's working with a false dichotomy. What that is equating is my mental condition with my faith, and those are not the same thing. They may be related, but they're not the same thing. And what's more, throughout the scriptures, we see all kinds of people struggling with their faith. Job, Elijah, Peter, that list could go on and on and on. And so, I don't know, I would probably be tempted to be rather sarcastic and say, well, I'm just following in the footsteps of Job or something. Probably wouldn't be helpful, though.
Another question from Michelle. Michelle says, how did your wife handle your depression at its worst? Was there anger or resentment at the situation? Was it hard for her to give back the head of the household position when you were ready to resume that role? Was she able to get a break from it all when you returned?
We were very blessed in that my wife's parents were able to stay with us for some time and be incredibly helpful through the darkest points of my illness. They weren't there all the time, but they were there a lot, and that was a very big help. But that is really a tough thing because, as if we're talking about the man, the head of the household here, as he kind of goes down into this dark hole, there's going to be all of these gaps and things that don't happen in the family that almost by necessity, his wife is probably going to step up and end up taking over. Coming back out of that is really, really hard because now all of a sudden we have to reevaluate what the responsibilities are in the household. This is why, honestly, it's often a good idea for both husband and wife to go through some transitional counseling together as he continues his healing, so that they're able to be upfront with what are the problems behind here, and how can we work through them together.
It's not a perfect analogy, but it strikes me as something somewhat parallel to when a husband is deployed in military service overseas. He lives 6 months or a year over there in very stressful conditions. His wife survives without him there with the family and the kids. He comes home, and everybody needs to readjust to that. I mean, and each in their own way.
That's right. That's right. I think I have not been in that situation, but that sounds like a pretty good analogy to me, that this is going to require adjustment. Now, a part of this, I think, too, is that life is a matter of constant adjustments. You know, I remember when my wife and I went through premarital counseling, that one of the words that kind of stuck with me through that was resilience, was that there has to be strength, but that there has to be bendability, the ability to move with one another, and that's a pretty good picture of life under the cross. Is that we know where we're going. We know whose we are, that we are in Christ. And as a result, our daily life of love toward the neighbor, that may take shape in different ways at different points in our lives.
Here's a question from William in Mississippi. Pastor Peppercorn has said that in his depression, that his depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain, yet in reading his book, he recounts many external things that could have thrown him into a deep emotional trauma. For example, sleep deprivation, overwork, neglect of family, super pastor mentality, one severe grief after another, and so on. Couple this with the turning point in your recovery being a complete rest away from the responsibilities, and it seems that illness as a cause of depression is to miss the point. Indeed, there are physical aspects to emotional trauma, but that is different from saying that the physical is the cause of the depression. Also, side effects from the medications he was taking, for example, anxiety, lethargy, suicidal thoughts, etc., could have made things worse and sent him into a deeper depression. A concern is that labeling depression as a disease and illness points people in the wrong direction for help, that is, invariably to medications based upon unproven theory that chemical imbalance in the brain is the cause of this. I'd appreciate his reaction to these comments.
What William has kind of struck a nerve on there, or what he's recognized, is that the brain is a marvelous and wonderful and unbelievably complex creation of God, and that, yeah, that's right, that the chemical imbalance has not been proven to be the case. Having said that, there's an awful lot of things that we move forward with medically that are not proven. So I'm personally not overstressed about that little point. But what he has hit on is that there are so many different causes that are at play. He mentioned the chemical imbalance, but there may be other physiological factors, genetic factors, all kinds of situational things, questions of sleep, exercise, diet. There are so many factors that may run into that, which, by the way, is not unique to depression at all. Almost all of those could be said for heart disease as well, for example. And so anytime we're talking about healing the body, we're talking about a multi-step process where there's going to be lots of different factors that come into play. And I certainly agree. It's not a matter of, well, once I find the right medication, bing, everything is going to be perfect. That is certainly not the case. But for me, what I had to go through and what I continue to go through years later is this sort of constant evaluation of, all right, is how I am serving my neighbor in my life today, is this something that I am capable of doing now in this way at this time? Am I doing too much, too little? What is kind of, where do all these things fit in? I actually think that those are questions that any Christian should be asking all the time, not just when things kind of get to disaster levels.
I do want to say, though, in our previous conversation, you said that if your doctor prescribes medication, take it.
I did. Yes, absolutely. And again, there is a huge amount of evidence that points to medications, antidepressants, working and having a positive effect. Are there other ways that might work? Yes, of course. And you could look at natural remedies. You could look at these things of diet, of exercise, sunlight, that there are all kinds of other factors. And as a Christian, I think that you're free to make those choices. For myself, I am willing to trust the doctors that I have had and that it has been successful for me.
Gina in Fort Worth, Texas has this question. With 20% of Americans reported to suffer from some sort of mental illness, how do we convince our congregations to make it a priority in the community, if not at large in the community of the person in the pew sitting next to us. How do we make that a priority? With about a minute here, Todd.
Well, here's the pickle with this, is that in the congregation, the priority of the congregation is the forgiveness of sins delivered in word and sacrament. That is the priority. And I'm always suspicious of desires to try and make the church into the staging ground for a cause. No matter, I mean, obviously this is a cause I believe in. So I'm not sure if that's the right question. I don't know. I have to struggle with that one a little bit, because I, for one, don't want the church to be the place that has, okay, here are the 27 causes that we support at this church, and be stuck sort of asking the question, where's Jesus at the end of it? That's not going to be serving anyone along the way.
Pastor Todd Peppercorn is our guest. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. 10 more minutes with him on the other side of the break. More of your questions and your comments on this Thursday afternoon, the 18th of April. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc, or leave a question or a comment for Pastor Peppercorn at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. facebook.com/issuesetc. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
More topics, more guests, more Jesus. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Pastor Todd Peppercorn is our guest. 10 more minutes in our conversation with him. Right to the questions here again. Emily asks, and I like it when our listeners ask very honest questions. This is Emily's. It's easy to love these people from a distance and very hard to be with them. How does one deal with things like schizophrenia on a day-to-day basis? It is so hard when they seem to have all of their faculties and reason, and at first glance anyway, seem perfectly normal, but then the conversation always swerves into their delusions and paranoia, and all you can think is, why can't you see that everything about you and what you are saying is nonsense? What do you do when you love them dearly and feel so helpless to do anything to make it better? What can the church do when the family itself is at a loss? That's a great question there, by the way. She says, I don't mean to be to talk about this in a defeated way, but I'm truly asking the question, what can be done? And that's just the ones you're related to. What about the ones down the street that you intentionally avoid, either from fear or relief, that at least you don't have the responsibility of taking care of that one, or do we? That's a big question, a big series of questions, Pastor Peppercorn.
Oh, God be with you, Emily. That is a tremendously difficult burden to bear. And you actually hinted at what I would consider to be step number one, and that is to confess your own weakness. As Christians, we are free to recognize and confess that we have limits, that there are things that I can do and things that I cannot do. I have limits in patience. I have limits of time. I have limits of mental, emotional energy. I'm not God. And so whenever I'm talking with really anyone, a part of what I have to recognize is that I cannot be God to this person. I cannot fix them. And there are undoubtedly going to be times of incredible frustration and even pain and doubts that are going to go through with all of these things. So that's where I would start, is first of all to recognize your own personal weakness and need for comfort and strength and hope in the gospel. That's number one. And probably number two is going to be to confess that weakness to others that you trust, because this is a shared burden. You know, there's that great picture that that Martin Luther uses of going to the communion rail, so to speak. And when we go to the rail and receive the sacrament of the altar together, a part of what happens is that we receive one another's burdens, and that I carry all of my sins, all of my burdens, all of my sorrows and troubles to the altar, to the rail, and there I share them with Christ and with the whole church. And so to simply confess our brokenness and how messed up we are, and maybe even at the end of our rope and lost, that is the first step, and it's a huge one. Then where do we go from there will look differently, because, Lord willing, you won't be alone in asking that question. You have sort of opened the door to others to help you. And this really is how the church ought to look at so many things that we try to, in our pride, act like we've got it all together, we've got it fixed. We need to be able to recognize when we can't answer those questions, and that's okay, because this is why we're not God, or this is maybe evidence that we're not.
We spoke last time about the intense isolation that is often brought about by depression or other mental illness, and Gideon in Ann Arbor has a question related to that. How do you go about explaining to someone with depression that going to church is beneficial to them, and that people in the church do care about them?
I think that you do it, first of all, by simply saying it, that, you know, this is what church is about. It's about the forgiveness of sins. It's about being in the presence of Christ. It's about receiving his gifts and mercy. But maybe what is really the issue is, How can you as a friend, or how can we as the church, make it so that place is a place of rest and safety for them, and is not going to be one more place to feel guilty or burdened or overstimulated? One of the things that I regularly will tell people, whether we're talking about mental illness or other sicknesses, etc., that they want to come to church, but they just can't handle the 178 questions that they're going to get afterwards, is also, I will give them permission to leave during the final hymn. If you can't handle talking to other people, then don't. That's kind of icing. That's bonus. That's not finally what we're there for. So it might be allowing that person to giving them the freedom to come and go as they need to. I know as a pastor, I've had many people over the years that will come late and leave early, and they're not doing it because they're behind or they have something else to do. They're doing it because that's what they're able to handle. That is a big possibility there. Another possibility is it may be that for a time the pastor needs to care for this person like they are shut in, like they are homebound. For whatever reason, if they're not able to handle the crowds, the people, the energy, the light, the stimulation, if they can't come to the church goes to them. And most pastors that I know would be very happy to do that, given the opportunity.
Dan asks this. How does the theology of the cross, and you'll kind of need to explain that, Pastor Peppercorn, How does it relate to mental illness? Also, may mental illness, especially in the saint, have some correspondence with the hiddenness of God? Two related questions there.
Mental illness and the hiddenness of God. I like that one. We'll get to that. So the first question is, how does the theology of the cross relate? Which last time I suggested really, for our purposes, means the theology of suffering, that how does God work through sorrow, hardship, pain, and even the death of his own son to bring about the salvation of the world? This is kind of the paradox of the Christian faith, is that God is present in our suffering. And understanding the theology of the cross like that really almost answers the question. As we suffer, as we are in anguish, as we are in isolation, and we pray with our Lord, my God, why have you forsaken me? It is precisely there that God is most present for us as his children. So that's kind of part one. The other on the mental illness and the hiddenness of God, that's a big theme throughout scriptures, of that God is hidden and reveals himself when and where he wills. I love that picture in Exodus of when Moses goes up on the mountain, that the closer he gets to God, the darker it gets. So that when he is on the top of the mountain, he is engulfed in darkness, and guess what? All he can do is listen. There is a very strong sense there that when all of my idols are stripped away, when all of my false pretensions are stripped away, when there's nothing left, it may be that is when God can work in us and for us, so that we can hear his voice. I wouldn't make that sort of a one-to-one correlation, but certainly in struggling with mental illness, a part of what you struggle with is recognizing your own idols and recognizing what is it that you cling to, and some of these things, so many of these things are stripped away along the way, and what's left is Christ and the gospel.
Finally, then, with only a minute to respond, has God abandoned people with mental illness? 1 minute.
Well, certainly not. I will never leave you nor forsake you. That is this message that we have to hold up in the church time and time and time again, is that you are God's child, and then it's not based on your physical or mental or emotional state, but that it's based on God himself, on his character, and on his promises, which he has given to you as his child. That's the hope. That's where that great verse in Psalm 73 comes in. My heart and my flesh fail me, but God is the rock of my heart and my portion forever. That is very, very hard to see in the midst of mental illness. And that's why it's so important that those of us that suffer from this need to hear it lovingly, carefully, patiently, but clearly, again and again and again, that God has not abandoned us, that we are still his children, and that he loves us no matter what may come.
Pastor Todd Peppercorn is pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Rockland, California, and author of the book, I Trust When Dark My Road, A Lutheran View of Depression. You can download this free resource under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Todd, thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Pastors Brian Holly and Charles Lehman about John 16, Your Sorrow Will Turn to Joy. We'll get a biography on Martin Luther's pastor, Johannes Bugenhagen, and that'll be Dr. Robert Kolb, and we'll also play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week. Folks, if you appreciate these in-depth conversations, pastoral conversations that we have here at Issues Etc., please consider supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. For any size donation during the Easter season, we will send you a CD of the sermons that I have preached on the Ascension of Christ and the Day of Pentecost. You can donate securely online, issuesetc.org, or make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support during the 50 days of Easter. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
When someone asks you, what do you believe as a Christian, how do you respond? Do you have a confession of faith? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, I Believe. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Mark Hemingway answers the question, why Lutheranism, with why not? Subscribe to the online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.